From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, March 4th.
Nanu.
I think I got to loosen the old jaw there when I'm talking. that was a nice Mork and Mindy moment,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I like you that. Said March.
You know, some weeks I would start over, but I ain't starting over. I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times.
Shazbot.
I can't think of a good transition back into California politics from that one. So, by the way, did you notice that, speaking of actors, that the governor, ex-governor, is off at his bodybuilding classic? I've been watching his tweets.
Oh, no. I noticed that he was speaking at Harrison Ford's environmental summit in San Francisco. That's from following his son's Twitter feed. Yes, I'm...
You're still on his son's Twitter feed?
You know, what can I say? I need... Laker updates.
Yeah, but Arnold is at his Ohio thing, and he's posing with well-oiled people. And so,
great.
You know, he's back to his life while the guy he handed the job over to...
Is back to his.
Is back to his and the never-ending quest. So we're sitting here on a Friday morning where the Budget Conference Committee has pushed a budget report to the floor of the Senate and the Assembly, and someone will get to... play with that stink bomb next week.
Only 6 days left till the March 10th deadline.
March 10th, the date etched in stone.
Not so much.
March 10th is the governor's self-chosen deadline for getting a June ballot measure in order or a June special election in order where you would have an extension of taxes on the ballot and maybe other stuff, maybe not. Though, let's talk about that. There's this feeling to... do less rather than more that we're hearing a lot about, that we've heard about this week. Like, there's the whole go-around Prop 10. You don't have to put the tobacco tax modification on the ballot.
Right.
Trying to have a simpler ballot. Again, people will vote everything down, blah, 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 blah. Yes.
Well, and does it all have to be on the same ballot? I mean, that's another question.
Could it be waiting to 2012 for some of it?
Well, right. I mean, especially some of the more conservative measures. If you're looking at the February ballot or whenever the presidential primary winds up being, could you put some things on that ballot where you're going to have potentially a more conservative turnout even because there's not a
competitive Republican presidential primary?
Right. So
is that a demand that you're hearing from some Republicans or a possible demand that they would rather have it on that ballot?
Just something I made up.
Oh.
Just a thought.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It's good to make things up.
Yeah. What the hell? What are we if we don't drive the conversation here?
What is your sense as we wrap this week up? I mean, I wrote something this week that felt that at the beginning of the week, and I still feel this way here at the end of the week. I can't tell whether things are solidifying or loosening. I mean, there's change out there. There's change afoot.
There's morphing.
But I can't quite figure out where it's morphing. I mean, I feel like that most signs say, like, you know, things could actually be happening here toward finding a deal. But I still think that when you actually ask people what that is, you still don't get a whole lot of specifics.
Right. I mean, I do think we're drifting toward specifics. I think there is draft.
We're adrift?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for example, there's draft language going around on CEQA reforms on the California Environmental Quality Act, which is something that's been on the Republican wish list for a while. There's discussions of what a pension plan would look like, a cap on pensions and then getting rid of things like retroactivity and airtime and spiking. And
which are all of these kinds of things that were in Democratic proposals last year that Schwarzenegger vetoed because he said they didn't go far enough.
Right.
But I have gotten
up at the cap.
Yeah.
The cap was.
But
there.
I've gotten the sense that that's about as far as Dems will go. They're not going to go to the 401k idea. They're not going to go to the little Hoover idea of cracking open current worker pensions.
No, but the little Hoover idea of a cap, I think, could be part of this.
And explain the cap, really. That means the cap on the maximum amount of salary with which a pension could be calculated.
Right. So, or maximum payout, however you want to construct it. They're talking about a maximum payout of $80,000 to $90,000. I think those were the numbers in the little Hoover
maximum
report.
Pension payout. You mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I mean, if you're getting a $90,000 pension a year, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not bad.
That ain't what you and I are getting. But
no,
anyway.
But nor is it what the Bell City Council is getting. But that's another podcast.
That is indeed. So all of that's out there. Yeah.
Right. So those things are out there. But again, it is hard. I have that same sensation. Some days it feels like it's actually coming together. The other days it feels like, you know, it's just. they're further apart because there's more things in the mix. I do think this. I do think that this deal is starting, at least on the Republican side, in the Senate. I just kind of get the feeling that there are more Republican senators that are more engaged on the details of what they might want for a deal than they would than there are in the Assembly. I think the Assembly is still a little bit up for grabs and a little listless. They're not necessarily stronger in their resolve, but neither are they sure of what they want. And that's just the rough impression that I get.
But it's a good impression because perhaps that would also kind of mesh into something else in some conversations in the building about, because one of the things that we get, the press gets dinged about a lot is that we say you need 4 Republican votes, 2 in each house. Well, that's assuming every Democrat goes along.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a given. And you can name a couple of Democrats, I would argue, in the Senate who may not go along for various reasons, in which case you may need more Republicans. And as one person in the building said to me, well, we may not need those Democrats, which kind of dovetails to your idea that there maybe are more Republicans in the Senate engaged in talks.
Right. Well, there were 6, 7 Senate Republicans who didn't sign the taxpayer caucus.
Whose heads
pledge.
Are all going on sticks.
Yes. Yes. Congratulations to you all.
Thanks to a couple of talk radio hosts in L.A.
Yeah,
but the Assembly, you get the sense not so much at this point, which means there's a lot to be done next week.
There seems to be a little more confusion on the Assembly side. I mean, I have a harder time identifying who the votes are. I mean, the Speaker seems pretty confident that he knows where this is headed. Talking to Assembly Republicans, I have less of a feel for it. Maybe it's just my own relationships with them. A lot of them are new, and mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel like they're as close, maybe, as they are over on the Senate side.
So let's talk about one of the things that happened this week that you and I were both sitting there, which was on Thursday, which was we've long been waiting, wondering. What's the viewpoint of the California Chamber of Commerce in all of this? Because everyone who knows California politics knows that the chamber is one of the biggest political players in the state, has been for a while, has had a lot of power in the last 7 years under Schwarzenegger, but also represents that business side of the aisle and large corporations and on and on and on and on and on. So we've all been wondering, what does the chamber think about the budget? And after about a half-hour conversation with Chamber President Alan Zarenberg, we're still kind of wondering what the chamber's position
really.
Were. We were and we're not. I mean, the reason I say that is that Zarenberg was very careful to not actually endorse the governor's plan, endorse a special election, endorse taxes.
Yes.
That being said, he dipped his feet ever so lightly in the pool of those issues by saying we want a comprehensive budget solution. In fact, he said it 26 or 29 times in 30 minutes. I had to listen to the tape.
Right.
Because he never quite defined what that meant.
Well, when pressed, he defined what it didn't mean. I mean, you asked him very pointedly about whether an all cuts budget would be considered a comprehensive solution.
He said today no.
He said no.
He also gave positive feedback to the legislative analysts' perception of Brown's budget, and the legislative analysts' perception of Brown's budget is that it's generally solid.
Fair, yeah.
So by extension, we all kind of got the point that the chamber is pretty good with where things are. And I think more importantly, Zarenberg wanted to telegraph to the Republicans who are thinking about working out a deal, keep working on it.
Right.
And that, I think, is a very important thing, especially with this taxpayer caucus idea, the heads on sticks, the no special election, no how, no way movement.
Right.
Zarenberg may, have in fact given enough cover to those Republicans to keep talking.
And that was definitely the promise that he made. I think what was the phrase he used? That anybody who voted for a comprehensive solution would have support in their communities. Translated into political parlance, that's anybody who votes for tax increases will get some financial backing from the chamber.
I mean, that's, depending on
that's,
what
that's. I mean, that's. Well, I mean, and I do think that that's a concern. I mean, you look at rightly or wrongly, we can have a discussion about whether this is a fair analysis or not. But the six people who voted for tax increases in 2009, none of them are in state office right now. I mean, some of them because of term limits, some of them because they ran and lost, some of them because they decided not to run. And so there's this perception, or there's a fear, a palpable fear on the Republican side, that if I vote for this Brown budget, it's career suicide. Now, and I think the chamber, the point of that press conference this week was to try to say, hey, look, guys, we'll be there for you. We've got your backs. What that means exactly and whether that can work, that remains to be seen. And I'm sure we'll be discussing it, you know, probably come election time, maybe next year.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, this whole notion of political muscle is, you know, it's certainly important. I mean, this is such an unsettled time because we're on the verge of a complete redrawing of political maps.
Right.
We're on the verge of a complete overhaul of the primary election process. You're going to have a lot of uneasy lawmakers in Sacramento come later this year in the fall, trying to wonder what their districts look like and who they're going to run against. And, you know, I think there's a real uncertainty about what forces will carry the day when someone is out there running for reelection. The core ideological part of your party, be you a Republican or a Democrat, a moderate pragmatic group, maybe the chamber is trying to get themselves back into maybe a more moderate pragmatic business approach than perhaps they were perceived sometimes under Schwarzenegger. You know, and who knows? I mean, there are a million ways to go on all of this, but I agree with you. I mean, Zarenberg was sending a clear signal, and I do think that signal was financial help, right?
And
I mean, you know, and
these folks are looking for guidance because of all the uncertainty that you just described. You know, this type of uncertainty does not tend to breed great political courage. Newsflash.
Understatement of the decade.
I mean, you know, on the contrary, it creates paralysis. And I think that is a lot of what you're dealing with. You know, you hear a lot about everyone's waiting for the Butch and Sundance moment, right? About whether they're going to, you know, who's going to jump off the cliff first and that, you know, they're going to have to do it together. And
who is Butch and who is Sundance?
Connie Conway is Sundance.
Anyway. Yes.
Anyway.
Sorry.
Go
ahead. The moment of jumping off the cliff together. We're in
right,
this together.
And so that's helpful. You know, it should be noted also, you know, that the chamber and the governor don't exactly have the warmest and fuzziest of relationships. It was clear that this was
In large part on the chamber financing an ad against Jerry Brown at the beginning of the campaign and
right,
or an
summer.
Independent expenditure ad, non-advocacy,
issue
whatever
ad.
It was. Issue ad, yes.
Yeah. Right, which was quickly taken down after some protests from the Brown camp. And so, you know, this could also be seen as something of an olive branch from the chamber to Brown, whether that's something that the governor wants or needs or accepts. You know, we'll see. But he's been busily courting business support. He's in San Francisco today, picking up the endorsement from the Bay Area Council.
LA Chamber last time.
Last week, yeah. And another business group in the San Fernando Valley last week. And so slowly he's trying to accumulate these chits. And he's looking for groups that will give political cover to Republicans to vote for the budget, because that is the first step. I mean, he'll come back to these groups looking for support if and when there is a campaign, and it looks increasingly like there will be. But for now, the first step is to get it all on the ballot.
Yeah, and just a mild clarification there. They actually don't have to vote for the budget, depending on how these bills are structured, the Republicans.
And they probably won't.
Yeah, the bills, yeah, because of Prop 25, the
right.
Republicans won't have to vote on the budget bills. They'd have to vote on a bill that called a special election.
Right. And then tactically, there's also a discussion. I don't think Brown wants them to pass a budget now. And they may not pass a budget.
Yeah,
unclear
too, right?
They might just pass a series of cuts and create this, you know, this ballot measure or ballot measures, whatever it may be. But
some kind of statutory framework for the cuts for a budget.
But part of the reason that Brown doesn't want a budget is because in Prop 25 there are punitive measures if there's no budget in place. And so so after the election, I mean, it's, you know, if the tax extensions are not approved by voters, then I think Brown wants to maintain a sense of urgency, because if those taxes go down, then they still have to pass a budget. And come June 30th, lawmakers stop getting paid because of Prop 25. And
though I can bet you that one of those lawmakers will take that to court on the issues we've heard before about labor laws.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, anyway, point being, while that's being, it is California.
While it would be litigated, right, the checks would stop coming.
Right. Unless there's an injunction. But anyway. And I think that's some leverage that Brown wants to hang on to for the day after the election. So.
A lot of this is still unsettled, though, about the package. I mean, we were talking before we started recording the podcast, like about the redevelopment issue, because the conference committee effectively agreed with the governor to abolish redevelopment agencies, which will absolutely, undeniably be challenged in court.
Yes.
The cities, the redevelopment, State Redevelopment Association, they've made it abundantly clear, see you in court. But the language, I mean, we haven't seen the conference committee's actual document yet. We're still sitting around waiting for it. But I was confused even by what the conference committee did. They said, well, we accept the governor's plan, but we're modifying what will happen after in the aftermath of that and some new redevelopment world and local government. It was all over the and it was somewhat emblematic to me of the way that the legislative process has worked on the governor's plan, which gets back to some of the changes that have happened. Democrats have balked at some of what Brown pushed out there to do.
Right.
They changed the adult day health care cut. They went from a hard cap on patient visits under Medi-Cal to a quote-unquote soft cap that doctors could work around. They shrunk the number of cuts in developmental services. Not to say that the governor loved all those cuts, but what's in their place? How big is the package actually going to be? Does that produce grumbling on the Republican side that the Dems didn't really – you know, and on and on and on and on. I mean, that's why that still feels unsettled to me about how that part plays out next week, too.
Well, and I think the larger point is that the point that you're making is that these negotiations are still ongoing. Even though there is now an official conference report, this is by no means a fixed document, and that you're still going to see some large fundamental changes to pieces of the conference report that were passed. And those negotiations will be whether technically in Big Five but you're going to see significant changes to this document that was passed by the conference committee this week. I'm sure that there will be some quick off the floor conference committee hearings. That's my prediction for the week,
because they did not technically close down conference committee.
Right.
Which
and that's another, and so, look, it's moving along. Democrats want to show progress that they're moving towards meeting this March 10th deadline. But the reality is negotiations are ongoing. I mean, I think that's sort of the simplest way to describe what happened this week and, frankly, what didn't happen.
I have this sneaking suspicion that we're going to have some really wacky hours of work next week.
Yeah, me too.
And that it will not end next week.
Yeah.
The 10th is a Thursday.
You're thinking Monday the 14th?
Well, certainly Friday the 11th continues to be discussions. I wouldn't be surprised. If you look at the election calendar, again, this is a really fluid issue that we've talked about a million times, that there is no hard and fast drop dead because the legislature can write simply a law that exempts themselves from current election code.
Right.
But there does become a point where the wheels come off an election. We're not at that point. Like March 10th is actually the same number of days before an election that the 2009 special election was called, 88 days before an election.
Well, there you go.
But it's at 68 days where local elections officials mail out ballots to overseas voters and military voters.
Right.
So I'm not saying that there's 20 more days after Thursday, but I am saying that I would not be surprised, as you're saying, if we're still here on Monday the 14th or something
like that. Well, and another little deadline that's been mentioned is the 14th, because Congresswoman Jane Harman resigned. I believe on the 1st or the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So 14 days out from that would be the 14th. And if there's the governor has 14 days to call a special election in that Los Angeles County district. And if there's a statewide election that's already been called by then, by the 14th, then the governor can consolidate that congressional with the special, which would be a cost savings of a couple million dollars so that L.A. County does not have to have an extra election. That's something the governor wants to do. In fact, Congresswoman Harman delayed her resignation at the request of the governor. And so, whether that's a real deadline or not, again,
I've actually never asked anybody, could that deadline be manipulated, the 14-day one, since that's also a state election law.
Well, I think you have to call the election within 14 days, I think.
Yeah, but can that be changed? I don't know.
I don't know. Or could you just call it, assume that you're going to get a June 7th? Anyway.
Some smart person will now tell me that I'm wrong or whatever when they hear this. But anyway.
As most smart people do.
It's just because I have such skepticism about deadlines around the Capitol. I guess that's kind of where it all comes from.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be an interesting week.
Will it, though?
Will it? Will it not?
Either way, we'll be here.
And we haven't even talked about the fact about that Jackson Browne came to visit the governor, apparently, when he was doing a concert in Sacramento. And my own personal favorite that he suggested a new state song for California.
Jackson Browne did?
Running on Empty.
I didn't hear that.
That was actually my own joke.
I appreciate that you laughed at it.
Well, because, you know, you kept seeing the photos, and I kept thinking, what's the appropriate song here? And then there was the picture. Remember the Twitter picture of Jackson, Jerry, Perez and Steinberg?
Yeah.
I don't know what that one, with the new big four, what did they tweet it as, something like that?
Being Steve Glazer,
exactly right, Doctor My Eyes is what came to my mind with that, like it was just painful to look at.
Yeah, I'm not a big Jackson Browne.
You're not a big Jackson Browne guy?
Although I did go to a high school with his son.
What?
Ethan, who's a big podcast listener.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a very strange connection. Six degrees of separation right here on the podcast.
Okay, I was kidding, he's not a podcast listener.
And before we get too far down this, let's wrap up. So,
okay.
For Anthony York
Say goodnight, John.
From the LA Times, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.